Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Corey Morningstar. She's an independent investigative journalist, writer, and environmental activist, focusing on global ecological collapse and political analysis of the nonprofit industrial complex. She resides in Canada. Her recent writings can be found on Wrong Kind of Green, The Art of Annihilation, and Counterpunch. Her writing has also been published by Bolivia Rising and Cambio, the official newspaper of the plurinational state of Bolivia. So first, thank you for your work, and second, thank you for being on the program.
Hi, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Hey. So I guess my first question is, I mean, just tell us about what you've been writing.
Basically, over the past few years, I guess this will be the sixth year, I've been writing about the nonprofit industrial complex, and that's, you know, obviously you know what that is, but maybe your readers probably know what that is as well, like all the NGOs within the huge paradigm that make up the complex that basically manage and control the movements. I started writing about that years ago, basically as an activist, was trying to figure out why nothing ever happened and why we weren't demanding things that we needed to be done. And, you know, I started digging into the research, and it's I just feel it's very, very critically important. And because no one else is doing it and people tend to shy away from that, it's not a popular subject. I just continued with those efforts.
So I think that you're right, that a lot of people won't know what the nonprofit industrial complex is. And you sort of alluded to it, but can you give a fair amount of detail on what you mean by that? I really nail it for people.
Well, basically today what we have are quote-unquote movements, what we call movements, but what they actually are, like each 350.org, for example, I'll use the big ones, Avaaz, Greenpeace, they're actually extensions of empire. And so a lot of people get sucked into these, you know, quote-unquote movements. They're not movements, they're campaigns, and they're sucked into them. And for some reason, people really, really want to believe in these, you know, NGOs. But what we're doing, we're just being reabsorbed back into the system. We're making the system actually stronger instead of weaker. And so it's, they're complete walls and barriers to any kind of meaningful change. And so it's very, very critical that we come to understand what they are and why we continue to lose decade after decade after decade. Does that clear it up a little bit more?
Well, but wait, you know, Greenpeace is about saving the whales, right? And 350.org is about stopping global warming, and the National Wildlife Federation is about preserving wild places. I mean, what heresy are you saying?
They're actually about preserving the power structures that exist, and they're actually about preserving capitalism and the industrialized civilization. And I mean, a lot of the NGOs even use that very language. You know, so it's not about preserving nature. It's not about protecting nature. It's about protecting privilege. And that's why they target middle class white privilege as their target audience. And I mean, they even poll before they do campaigns and before they, I mean, these groups have billions of dollars. This is a $1 billion industry. And they poll to give you what they know you already want to hear. I mean, so that's the, you know, what's so seductive about these campaigns and why people are drawn to them, because they actually tell people what they already know people want to hear. They make people feel good. I mean, what you tell people, what I tell people, they don't really want to hear that, you know, most people with privilege, that is.
Okay, I was of course being ironic when I was saying that Greenpeace is great and everything. And,
oh, I know that.
And so I agree that they blunt, co-opt, they co-opt a real desire to save the real world into sustaining capitalism. But can you prove? So I agree with you. I'm a friendly audience, but can you prove that to me?
Can I prove to you that they want to save capitalism? Sure. I mean, Greenpeace is one of the founders with 19 other organizations of Tech Tech Tech. That's also called the GCCA. That's the acronym for it. And that was started in 2007 in Bali with $300,000 from that government. They went on to completely dominate using that Tech 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 campaign. I'm not sure if you remember that before Copenhagen in 2009. They teamed up with the world's biggest advertising firm, Havas, out of Europe in the United Nations, and they made that into a massive consumer advocacy campaign. And they partnered with Richard Branson's Virgin Airlines. I mean, they partnered with nuclear corporations, with the biggest corporations on the planet, and they absolutely dominated that whole climate conference. And not only did they dominate it, they demanded, quote unquote, demanded 2 degrees. And at the same time, you had at Copenhagen, you had Bolivian G77 saying we can't surpass 1 degree. And they asked, the G77 was demanding, you know, massive radical emission cuts. And they were completely drowned out by tick, tick, tick. And that's what they do. They protect the power structures. They protect their funders. And so, I mean, that alone, just the media release even states that what that campaign was for, to exploit consumers, you know. And you can go on, if you look at my writing, I back that up all the time. There's tons of evidence that Greenpeace is completely, in the corporate boardroom and has been for years and years and years, working with these huge corporations on market mechanisms as the quote-unquote solution to climate change, such as RED, which is, assigning monetary value to nature.
So I want to come back to this assigning monetary value to nature in a minute. But before we do that, I want to read a couple of quotes from some bigwigs in the nonprofit industrial complex. And you can tell me if you think these fit, because I think I'm understanding you. I just want to be more clear.
Okay.
So there's, for example, Lester Brown, who has been labeled as one of the world's most influential thinkers and the guru of the environmental movement, who keeps coming up with all these plans to, quote, save civilization. He says things like, we talk about saving the planet. Those of us working on the environmental issues have been talking about the need to save the planet for some time, but the planet's going to be around for a while. The question is, can we save civilization? Or there's Peter, I never know how to say his last name, Peter Kariba. He's with the Nature Conservancy, he's chief scientist. Instead of pursuing the protection of biodiversity for biodiversity's sake, a new conservation should seek to enhance the natural systems that benefit the widest number of human people. Bill McKibben always says explicitly he's trying to save civilization, not the planet. Here's a great one, a statement signed by, quote, 160 leading environmentalists from 44 countries who are calling on the world's foundations and philanthropies to take a stand against global warming because global warming, quote, threatens the fabric of civilization. And they don't mention, you know, coral reefs, prairie dogs, vaquitas. One last one. On the 350.org style guide for designing their public arguments, they say, focus on people. Use visuals to emphasize that climate is a real, tangible human problem, not an abstract, sick, ecological issue. And so does this fit into what you're saying?
Because they polled, right? They pre-polled for all that information, and they realized, they're realizing it's through a lot of social engineering. And actually, that's another huge part of the nonprofit industrial complex, and there's specific NGOs that really focus on this social engineering and behavioral change. And it's about changing people's, like, the ideology of society collectively. And so that becomes normalized, you know, like the air we breathe, that idea that it's not about nature. I mean, in the last section I'm working on in the divestment series, I'm ending that with just the observation of, even at one time, the tree was sort of like the symbol of the environmentalism, environmental movement, ecology, the beautiful grand tree of life. And now Instead of that, we have replaced that with a windmill, with a solar panel. I mean, we're really engineering people to, you know, basically create an even further division with nature than we already have, which is, you know, really, really sad.
Okay, so here's my perception of this, and let me know if this is where you're going to, or if you disagree with this. And what it feels like to me is that there's all this tremendous energy. People recognize that they don't see as many birds as they used to. They recognize that they don't see as many fireflies. You know, I talk to people all over the country. In the Southeast, they don't see as many fireflies. People don't see as many moths as they used to. They don't see as many birds. They don't see as much. Of course, it's all dying. And they're worried. People who live along the oceans are telling me they don't like to go to the beach anymore because they see dead seabirds everywhere. And I mean, the world's dying, and we know this, and we feel a lot. But then part of the brilliance of this whole NGO industrial complex is to take that energy that we feel that the system is fundamentally killing the planet, and then convert that into essentially a lobbying arm of the solar or wind industries. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even you can see that years ago, because I was just looking back over some stuff, just cleaning up some articles, and back in 2001, I started writing a series about the paralysis behind the tar sands campaign/movement, and that started with an indigenous group out west in Canada, and then that became completely co-opted and eaten up by the bigger greens, and then that became, instead of top stop tar sands, that all of a sudden transitioned into Stop the Keystone XL. And then you've got whole America focused on one singular pipeline, and that's it. You know, and that's what everyone's energy and thought processes went into, and it went completely away from the fact that our ecosystems are collapsing and everything is dying, and, you know, everything. I mean, it even shut out all the, the massive social problems in Dakota from the oil fields there. And anyway, they just come in and take over all the dialogue, and they reframe it to protect power, to get people back on the the talking points. They control the talking points. And anyway, it's a huge problem. I mean, I have people won't write about it because it quickly become very unpopular and people frame it as divisive. But we need to divide from this. I mean, we need to make a division, because these people are funded by the very entities and governments and corporations we need to be fighting against. You know, this whole system, it needs right now. And that's another part of it. The nonprofit industrial complex, they are so key to things right now, like the stabilization of sovereign states to steal the last of the Earth's natural resources. They're key to they're just key to everything. I mean, we've got a huge global economy that's at close to stall speed. I mean, those are the words of Larry Summers from October of last year. We have a global economy teetering on the brink of collapse because we have no, the growth has become so stagnant that we're pumping oil now into the ground. And, you know, we've got these NGOs now trying to create new, inject trillions of dollars into the system to keep this system going. And so this whole thing over renewable energy that came out of COP, that's not really renewable energy. I mean, it's framed as that, but it's actually all about nuclear and biomass.
And even if it were about wind and solar, they're just other industrial products too.
Absolutely.
With extreme costs. That's one of the things that I don't understand, how more people don't understand, that you clearly do, is that capitalism always needs to exploit new markets. And this is just a way to hand public monies over to a new, basically they've created a new energy frontier to dump a bunch of money into to keep the economy going.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, it's, you know, stealing the treasury to inject it back into privatization and corporations to keep this this suicidal economy going. I mean, the only way to use less oil is to actually use less oil. And all these quote-unquote renewable energies, they're all carbon-based, and they're all fossil fuel-dependent from inception to the end of the life cycle, which they're also designed to become obsolete as well. I mean, even on windmills, after 20 years, they're melted down or burned at the end of the contract. I mean, people talk about this stuff as it's like it's made out of fairy dust and butterfly kisses. It isn't, and that's incredible. I guess it just goes to show how much we want to believe that the system can continue, even though at the same time it's killing us.
So you talked about the effects of, you said that the money comes from the same sources, and one of the things I think has been, it is completely brilliant about your work is your ability to track the money. So can you talk a little bit? I do want to come back to assigning value to nature, which is just abhorrant, but we'll leave that as, we'll come back to that in a minute. Can you talk for a minute about some of the specific connections that you have made on interlocking between pro-capitalist forces and these supposedly green movements, and also the money that's involved in them and where that comes from?
Well, it's like I said, it's a $1 billion industry, and actually I don't have the figures in front of me, but it could even be, I was reading over something last year that had a $1 trillion figure. So we're talking, this is a huge, huge industry, right? And you have basically the foundations operate as money laundering machines. And so what you have, I mean, everybody, especially Greenpeace, you always hear from people, oh, they don't take any corporate money. They take no corporate money. Well, they don't have to take corporate money, and that's, everyone loves to be able to say that, because the corporations funnel the money from the capitalist system, right, from the end product. They funnel the profits into the foundations, which is then tax-exempt, and then it's invested into NGOs that control the dialogue, control, you know, the quote-unquote movements, and basically engineer the public to acquiesce to what they are designing in the think tanks and in the back rooms. And so everything that 350 of us and, you know, all the rest of them are working on, they're already being wanted, they're already being pursued by those elite, you know, the elite foundations, the oligarchs, the empire, whatever you want to call it, the state. They're all one and the same, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So I feel like I'm rambling a bit here. So basically the foundations, the money then goes into the NGOs. The NGOs, for example, Rockefeller, One Sky, the Clinton Foundation, they all pumped millions into One Sky, which then it was 350 One Sky. 350 became the dominant one that the public connected with. So then they folded One Sky, which was an incubator NGO of the Rockefeller Foundation, into 350, because that was the one not connected with the public. And so, anyway, they use these groups to basically engineer society to do what they already want to give us. So we're not demanding, we're not making demands of anything. We're demanding what they have planned for us. So it's basically like a...
So basically, for example, subsidies for solar and wind, or biomass, or whatever, you know... So basically,
yeah,
that's where it gets
wanted,
funneled,
yeah.
so they can suddenly assemble 100,000 people on the streets of some city to demand the subsidies be given to the industrial sectors that they want the subsidies to go to.
Right. Like right now we're demanding, they have, I don't know, probably millions and millions and millions of people, quote unquote, demanding, and I guess the people are sort of demanding it, a new economy, right? A new economy, quote unquote, new economy. What is the new economy? And then the 350 has a new campaign coming up, the net system. Well, they make it sound amazing, right? And it's, you know, beautiful, holistic, sounds fantastic, makes you feel like $1 million. What is the new economy? Well, what they don't tell you at all is that it's the monetization of nature. You know, assigning monetary value to nature. And so we have people demanding things they don't even know what they're demanding, right? And even the, you know, quote-unquote, green energy, that's, the majority of that is biomass, which no NGO talks about at all, you know, and then we've got
Let's be clear on biomass, that what biomass is either A, doing a monocrop of corn that then is turned into fuel, so it's just the same old agricultural model, or it's cutting down forests and pelletizing them and burning them.
Right.
And, you know, they call that renewable. And I just want to say, just because I just learned this recently, and it makes me very, very angry, that when they cut down a forest to turn it into pellets, they don't count, that is counted as carbon neutral, such that they don't actually count the carbon emitted when you burn that forest, because supposedly the forest is going to grow back. So all this stuff, when they talk about, they reduced emissions by converting to biomass, what that means literally is they cut down a forest and burned it.
Right. And so before that would have, you know, decades ago, I'm not sure how long ago, but that would have evoked masses of environmentalists to come out and fight, right, against that. But now, because we've been basically conditioned, if you have enough people saying this is all normal, this is all normal, just like our insane society, right? This is all normal, this is all normal. No one blinks an eye. And, you know, just we're okay with that. That doesn't matter anymore. You know, if environment is not about trees, wow, you know, what kind of environmental movement is this? If we're okay with burning trees for energy. And I mean, another thing too, who's getting this energy? You know, it's 1% of all the global greenhouse gas emissions being consumed, 1% of the population, you know, people like anyone that can get on a plane, basically. It's not like everyone in the world is sharing in this, you know, sort of luxury and all this energy. It's a tiny handful of people taking it all and stealing it.
So I interrupted you when you were talking about monetizing nature. Can you be explicit and give examples, and you can just make them up, of what that means? Because monetizing nature sounds abstract to me. So can you talk about what that means and then talk about what's wrong with it?
Well, it's assigning value to everything that provides a service. So, I mean, that is everything, right? Everything provides a service. An earthworm, I guess people would relate more easily to that of a bumblebee, right? Because it's a pollinator. So how much is a bumblebee worth? You know, it's putting a price tag on every single thing that has value, and what that's to do, especially right now with this whole global economy stagnant and not growing, it creates an absolutely brand new untapped market. And now we're going to take everything in the world and assign a price to it, and we're going to be able to go in and legally take possession of whatever indigenous lands are left. I mean, it just opens up all kinds of human-centric, really sick American ideologies behind this whole premise. And it's terrifying, and it's happening right now, even though you won't hear any NGO talking about it publicly in a campaign. Behind the scenes, like even the CEO of Greenpeace in the States has created, or I don't know if she created it. I believe she's the president of an ecosystem services group that just started. They're all over the place. There's tons of them. It's also called natural capital. It's a huge thing happening right now behind closed doors. And the global goals, the United Nations global goals, I'm not sure if you've heard of that. It's all about that. It's all about sustainable development goals. I've seen legislation being passed in the States recently under the Obama government, the Obama administration at the White House. It's happening, and no one knows about it, and no one understands it. It's all going to be promoted as an amazing thing under the guise of externalities, assigning a price, and polluter pays principles. The polluter pays principles. So anyway, it's alarming. It's frightening. We should be sick about it and trying to stop this, but there's absolutely zero traction on it.
So isn't that actually, and this is an ironic question again, but isn't that actually a good thing? Because right now, they can wipe out frogs, and then I don't, if they don't have to pay anything to wipe out the frogs, and if they have to pay something to wipe out the frogs, then the market will make it so they won't wipe out all the frogs. Isn't that the logic?
But what if you say those frogs, okay, so say I have a little herd of frogs at the end of my street, and we assign a price to them. So say we think they're worth $5,000, and so they're protected because they're worth $5,000, and no one's going to touch them. Well, what happens when I have a developer come along, and he says, well, I'm willing to pay $6,000 for those frogs, right? The market, that's how the market works. Whatever has a higher value wins, and all of a sudden, like, it's just completely disgusting, and it's just so human-centric to believe we can assign monetary prices to nature. And it's even more ironic because money is not even worth anything. You know, everyone knows that our dollar is worth nothing, and you know, all of our money is backed by nothing. I mean, if you want to, you know, keep peeling off layers, how ironic that we're going to destroy our whole planet for money that's worth nothing.
Years ago, I was doing a Skype conversation with some people some students and teachers at a Ivy League school. And at this Ivy League school, they were really promoting exactly what you're talking about, this putting a value on everything. And so I said, hey, I think that's a great idea. In fact, I think we should do it with humans too. And they agreed. And I said, in fact, I said to one of the students who was really promoting it, I said, you know, you go to an Ivy League school, so we can presume that the current value of your expected life earnings is like $2 million, right? And he said, sure, we can agree to that. I said, well, I got good news for you, which is I made a deal with your parents to kill you. And the bad news is I'm going to kill you. And the good news is that I gave your parents a great deal because I paid them $5 million for you. And you see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, when you put it in those terms, and all of a sudden it doesn't seem like such a good deal for that guy. It's as soon as you realize that the other is a subjective being with a life of its own, then this whole thing becomes, like you're saying, really, really obscene.
Yeah, it's really, really insane. I mean, the documents that I've researched, and I mean, I just poured through massive amounts of documents, and I'm still very much involved in researching that, because when I began with that, it was sort of just in its initial stages, and now it's come a lot further along. But they actually refer to the CEOs as the new, I'm trying to think the word they use, basically, you know, the new guardians of nature.
The CEOs?
Yeah, like the new the corporate executives, the CEOs will be the, the new, you have to go in and read my article on it. It's really, really, it'll blow your mind.
So what is can you name the article so that people can look for it?
Sure. It's, let's see, it's part 7 of the divestment tour brought to you by Wall Street series that I've been working on for the past couple of years, and it's building acquiescence for the commodification of the commons under a banner of a new economy.
Okay, so yeah, I will recommend that people look at that.
It's really mind-blowing. Like Michael Swift from Australia, who has written an op-ed for Wrong Kind of Green, one or two, he actually helps me with a lot of the research, too. It's just absolutely mind-blowing.
So let's go back for a minute. You just mentioned the word divestment. Do you want to talk about divestment for a moment? Because that's a huge thing among these NGO types, is we hear all the time that, oh, divestment is the way. Well, first off, what is divestment in this case? Divesting from what? And from the NGO perspective, what are they arguing that this is, why this is so great? And then you tell me why their arguments are, where their arguments fall short.
I mean, it's a huge topic because so far I've written 13 pieces in that series. But basically, divestment is just another distraction against the obvious. The only way to burn less oil is actually not use it, right? The only way to burn less oil is to use less oil, right? The only way to use less fossil fuels is to actually use less fossil fuels. And what you won't see is any kind of campaign, you know, that actually addresses consumption in our Western lifestyles. Like, you just won't see it. And as we've already talked about, in fact, campaigns protect the lifestyle. They protect the industrialized civilization that benefits very, very few people, right? Anyway, divestment, the idea is you divest from, say, Exxon, from your Exxon portfolio, and then you take that money and you invest it into quote-unquote green energy. And so most people, and not to mention, you have a five-year window of doing that, so you could actually just announce that you're doing it and not do anything, and 5 years goes by and no one even follows up. But aside from that, I mean, who cares? Like, you divest from Exxon, you put it into probably portfolio, because now there's, you know, tons and tons of these, like, for example, Al Gore has generation investments, and it's all, you know, quote-unquote green portfolios. And as we know, renewable, say you think you're putting money into renewable portfolio, what you're really putting it into is mostly biomass and other fault solutions. Not that, I mean, they're all fault solutions, you know, pretty much, but especially some are worse than others. But they're all carbon dependent, like we've already talked about. They're all carbon based. You can put your money into, I don't know, porn. You can put it into Lockheed Martin, all kinds of shit. And all those investments are all dependent on the increasing, right? And every quarter, they're all dependent on growth. So who cares about divestment? Put it into here, put it into there. Every portfolio, every investment depends on growth. Growth depends on exploitation of people and pillaging of the planet. And so it's just, you know, more illusion. People want to believe they can do something so easy and it will make a huge impact. But it's just another distraction. And not to mention, it's also another way of trying to drum up, you know, these trillions of dollars needed for this third industrial energy revolution that's going to save this industrialized capitalist system that's failing.
I think it's pretty significant that a lot of the so-called environmental NGOs, the big ones, argue explicitly that that stopping global warming does not have to hurt the economy, or protecting the planet does not have to hurt the economy. And it seems to me that gives away a lot of the game right there. But like we said with those quotes earlier, that what they're really about is protecting the economy from the effects, the negative effects of the economy.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that.
And so how does this...
It's even way worse. I mean, we'd really have to talk for hours about this, how bad this is and how... What a tragedy it is that no one understands the damage of standing behind these organizations. And every time you sign a petition, you give them credibility and legitimacy that they do not deserve. You know, like they're pulling us down into the abyss where it's just getting worse and worse and worse. We're not facing reality. We're not facing our future. We're throwing our children into the trash can. You know, Avaz, who's right up there at the very, very top of the helm with 350.org for their ability to draw in and appeal to the public. They have been instrumental in the the annihilation of Libya, the destabilization of Syria. Now they're in Burundi. There was an incident a couple years ago where it looks like Bolivia could be on the edge of a coup that didn't actually happen because of the leadership. But they are completely, you know, all the founders, the seven founders are there, are completely enmeshed and embedded with the World Bank, U.S. State Department, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the United Nations. I mean, it's amazing, and it's really, really revealing, and another tragedy that we do not know our history, we do not do our research, you know, that we just go in blindly and trust this information, and we go in blindly and trust these organizations that are bringing us closer and closer to, you know, to the abyss.
And I'm thinking, too, about, you know, and a fair number of people have written about this. I was influenced really deeply by John Stauber some 20 years ago when I first was reading him about this, that so many of the, and plus I've experienced this myself in small environmental organizations, you have these smaller organizations that are completely starved for resources of any sort. I mean, people are doing this on their spare time because they have to have other jobs to pay the rent, and the small organization has no money, and then there's this, people can think they're doing a tremendous thing by handing money to Greenpeace or to some large organization, when there's these tiny local environmental organizations that are absolutely starved.
Exactly. And it's really a shame, because then what happens is little tiny ones end up going to, but they're approached by the bigger ones, and then they take the funding, and then they're, you know, then they end up kowtowing to the wishes of their funders. And the more funding they get, the more dependent they become on the funding. You know, oh, all of a sudden we have money for an office. Oh, move out of the living room, away from the living room table, let's get an office. Well, now you've got, you know, it's just like us in the system. You become a slave, and you can't get off that hamster wheel. The more embedded you are into the system, the more enslaved you are. And so it's, I mean, for instance, people, I remember a few years ago, one of my friends sending Avaz $20. And this is before I really knew much about Avaz. It was quite a long time ago. But then it was amazing when I did the research to find that the CEO of Avaz makes, and this is old, so I'm sure it's a lot more now, but a few years ago he was making $190,000 a year. And that's, you know, all, plus all this expenses paid, and that's not even including consulting fees for, you know, Gates Foundation and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so they're making these huge salaries, and then we're giving, you know, people are giving them money they can't even afford, instead of that tiny local grassroots organization that truly is doing good work and really could use your support.
Well, two things about that. One of them is that I know one of the classic examples is that Jay Hare was head of the National Wildlife Federation, and as soon as he quit that, he immediately went to work as a public relations flack for Plum Creek Timber Company. And that was just a great example. And there's interlocking boards between the big green so-called green organizations and just horrible, you know, timber companies or waste management companies. I mean, the boards are actually interlocked.
Yeah, absolutely. They are. I do show a lot of the interlocking relationships within the divestment series. I just I haven't done work on that set for quite a while, and so I don't have the names right off the top of my head. But you're right. I mean, they're up to their eyeballs in those types of relationships. One person, I mean, you look at, they're all over on each other's boards, right? Like, that's what I mean. They're all one and the same. And it's just sort of, it's become really like a Greek tragedy or whatever to see now how people put so much faith and trust into these organizations, and they are completely in bed with with the empire, with the state, with everything that we need to be resisting. It's insane. Like, it's really insane. It's insanity, like you always say.
So we have about 7 or 8 or 10 minutes left, and so well, first, before we start winding down, are there some other large topics that you want to cover that we haven't had a chance to speak about at all?
Well, I just think it's really large topics. I mean, the most recent thing, I guess, that's happened is the big Greens announcing Keystone XL's this huge victory when it wasn't, not at all. And that's not to say that I don't absolutely respect those people that were on the front lines, resisting against pipes being laid in their territories and that type of thing. But it is to say that they gave that away, that line, because they did not need it. They set up a duplicate line that transported seven times the amount, and at the same time all that was announced, there's more oil than ever just sitting around, like we've already talked about. We have this massive, huge oil glut to the point they don't even know where to store it anymore, right? It's just sorry, clearing my throat. So it's to pretend there's, I mean, I wrote an op-ed with Forrest Palmer, who works with me a long kind of green about that. We do ourselves. Sorry, Derek, I'm dying here.
Well, take a drink of water or take your time. It's okay.
We do ourselves no favors, pretending we have victories where they're not real victories. I mean, that was just a huge PR stunt for the Obama administration, and no one won anything. I mean, we've got to get away from this. This society that we have now is all based upon basically individualism and just serving, our own egos, and it's become really dangerous. And it's again, that guy David, what's his name? Robert Wilson, who does the energy work.
Yes, actually, I've used some of his citations. Go ahead.
Like, I read something from him yesterday because he's not doing his blog anymore, and in the last post he said he can spend a half an hour writing something on renewable energies and it gets thousands of hits. He can spend half a week writing on biomass, it gets two hits. And it goes back to, and I was talking to Forrest Palmer about that, because it goes back to, that's why, people don't really want to read my work. It's hard, it's long, you have to sit and think, it's comprehensive, it can be difficult to absorb that kind of knowledge, and it requires discipline, right? And it doesn't make you feel good, whereas McKibben and Klein and everybody else, they give people what makes them feel good. And now we're more driven to seek what makes us feel good than we even care about nature. I mean, that's just sad, right? That's just sad what's happened.
Yeah, it's profoundly sad. Okay, first, we've covered a lot of ground in this interview. We've got just a couple minutes left. We've
Yeah, it's
covered.
pretty choppy. I mean, trying to talk about so much in an hour is pretty choppy, but hopefully people, pick up
Well,
things. Okay.
that's what I was going to ask you to do is can you sum up? So somebody says, I heard this great interview today. And somebody says, what was it about? And then the first person says, it was. So what is the, okay, like, I
How
saw.
about this? How the nonprofit industrial complex fucks us over and guarantees our annihilation.
Okay, so that's great. And then so once people recognize that, once people really metabolize what you're saying and understand what you're saying, what do you want them to do?
I think it's really, really important to understand power and to understand the systems. It's important to understand why there is no such thing as green economies. All this idea yesterday, I was looking at all these different certification schemes, also another billion-dollar industry, like certified forestry, certified oceans, certified fish, certified seafood, just if you can imagine, certified, they're all sustainable, right? So certified sustainable palms, certified sustainable biomass, certified sustainable, mining. Mining is a new one.
Well, I think that that makes a lot of sense because I think, I mean, you can certainly have certified sustainable murder of the planet. I mean, that's right? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
But, I mean, I think there's no point in anyone even going out and marching in the streets or doing anything until we understand power and we understand, how this whole system works and how this system and capitalism unite in folding us back into the system that we think we're, that we like to at least like to tell ourselves that we're resisting. And we're being folded, being right back, brought into the fold again, over and over and over again. And so I think it's really important to start asking, what is this campaign? Why even get involved in those campaigns? They're bullshit. I mean, I don't even want people to consider getting involved in them. Figure out why we shouldn't be involved in them. Figure out how did single-handedly the nonprofit industrial complex has destroyed the real movements over the past five decades, since the 60s. I mean, all that foundation money flooding into the movements just destroyed it. And those that can't be co-opted were murdered. I mean, that's where we are. I think people have to really read. I think people have to really read and get start, garner some discipline and figure out history and power. I don't think there's much point of doing anything if we don't understand those basic things.
And then once people do understand those basic things, we have like a minute left.
Okay.
Once people do understand those basic things, what then? Okay, so you don't want them to participate in a Greenpeace-sponsored march or a 350.org-sponsored march. What then do you want them to do if they care about the planet?
Well, I want us collectively to strip away all the credibility and legitimacy of this whole nonprofit industrial complex that keeps us enslaved. And the other things I want, once we understand why that's so important and critical and what our work is, the other things that need to be done are things that you and I and a lot of people that listen to you already know need to be done. It's just we can't talk about them on the show or on Facebook or anything else, or we'll probably be thrown in jail. I think we know what has to be done. It's just something you can't say.
Well, I would like to thank you for your work, and I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Corey Morningstar. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.